President Bush's commitment to revive the Middle East peace process, along with the continuing demands of the war in Iraq, will command substantial attention during Mr. Bush's second term. But the president and his foreign policy advisers face an array of other international issues, from Afghanistan to the nuclear ambitions of Iran and North Korea, to the humanitarian tragedy in Darfur, and to relations with old Europe. For a perspective on the world confronting a second Bush administration, we spoke earlier this weekend with Robert Gallucci, dean of the Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, and Walter Russell Mead, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Bob Gallucci began with the challenge to resolve the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians.
The first thing it will require is that the United States adopt a much more activist role in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict than it has to date. And while the commitment is a good thing to hear, I think a lot of people will believe it when they see it.
Walter, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, I think we've got two problems. An Israeli problem, which is to say in Israeli politics, we haven't seen much belief in the Israeli side that a reasonable compromise offer would end their problems, that the Palestinians would agree. Then on the Palestinian side, while Yasser Arafat's death has removed an obstacle, at least to U.S. participation, it's going to take some time to get a Palestinian leadership emerging that has the authority and the ability and the stability to make some of the very difficult concessions that Arafat could never make.
Bob Gallucci, to many, North Korea and Iran's nuclear programs are the most pressing foreign policy problems facing the president. How do you expect the Bush administration to approach those threats?
There has been a real unwillingness to engage these rogue states, not wishing to negotiate, where negotiate means to give in order to get. There was a hope, I think quite clearly, that a success in Iraq would have a salutary sort of Libyan-like effect in both Tehran and Pyongyang. That has not yet happened. What I'm really saying here is that there is an unwillingness to go to negotiation as a method of dealing with the problem, and the alternative, or one of the alternatives, which is the use of force, is not something that the administration can easily elect to do in terms of troops available, nor in terms of consequences they would wish to endure. So what we are left with, if we continue on the same track, is a kind of containment policy that doesn't contain. It does not prevent the North Koreans from accumulating quantities of fissile material, plutonium and highly enriched uranium, and doesn't stop the Iranians from also accumulating highly enriched uranium.
I tend to agree that we've got unsatisfactory alternatives. We've got negotiations that don't seem to get what we want at a price that the administration is prepared to pay. It's possible that there is no real negotiated outcome possible, in the sense that there's nothing that we could offer North Korea or Iran that would make them happier than the possession of nuclear weapons. So it may be that the negotiation channel itself doesn't get us anywhere. And the alternative is also unsatisfactory if you look at whether you look at military force or maybe just trying to learn to live with nuclear Iran and nuclear North Korea.
Bob, you have something to add?
I think I want to disagree just a tad with my colleague Walter on two points. One, that we can learn to live with nuclear weapons armed North Korea and Iran. And second, that negotiations will not work. On the first point, I don't know what's in second place, but I know that the primary threat to the national security of the United States over the next decade or more comes not from China, not from Iraq, and not from terrorism alone, but from terrorists armed with nuclear weapons. That is the one thing against which we really do not have a good, credible defense in the normal terms, nor do we have a plausible deterrent against those who value our death more than their life.
Let's talk about Russia. Russian President Vladimir Putin has used fear of terrorism to consolidate his power in Russia, roll back democracy in that country, and there hasn't been a lot of vocal criticism from the United States. Is that likely to change, Bob Gallucci?
We have a full menu of issues to deal with the Russians over, and I'm assuming that we have, I hope correctly, expressed our concern about the direction that Putin is taking Russia. There always was a discussion about whether democratic transition in Russia was reversible, and I know the general proposition in conventional wisdom is that it was not. But now I at least wonder about that. I think this is an incredibly important issue, but I, at the risk of sounding like Ahab here, I'm going to go back and say that there is an overriding concern we have, and that is to prevent fissile material, particularly highly enriched uranium, from falling into the hands of terrorists. And right now, if we were to lose an American city and we were to ask ourselves how could that possibly happen, there would be an answer that all of us who are in the business would know right away, and that is that it would have leaked out of Russia or possibly Pakistan.
Walter, let's talk some about relations with America's traditional allies in Europe have been strained since the Iraq War. How concerned should the president be about what's called old Europe?
Well, I think we can narrow it down a little bit and say U.S.-French relations have more often been bad than good over the last 200 years. But it's really the U.S.-German relationship that was once the pillar of transatlantic cooperation and is now in pretty bad shape. And some of that is our fault for poor diplomacy. There are other ways we've exacerbated it. Some of them are, frankly, the Germans' fault. Schroeder's playing the anti-American card to try to eke out a very narrow win in an election. I think definitely trying to rebuild U.S.-German relations is a very important part of what the Bush administration will need to do if it wants to be successful in its second term.
Bob Gallucci.
I think there needs to be an attitudinal shift here. I don't know whether the Secretary of State will remain or who will replace him. There's going to be an enormous burden on the Secretary, whoever it is, to persuade the President and others in the administration that the best thing to do is not to bash Europe. That would be an awfully good start. And I think a certain reaching out at this point to others beyond the United Kingdom would be a terrific idea.
One of the countries that is getting quite a bit of headlines, especially because of the horrible humanitarian crisis there, is in Sudan, in the Darfur region. Walter Russell Mead, I understand you may be going to Darfur. What about the United States' role? Is there one with the international community to try to either stop the killing or to help the people whose lives indeed have been devastated?
Well, you know, this is one of those questions that really forces Americans to look at some of the problems with the comfortable assumptions we bring to foreign policy, because it is true that in the international community, the United States has taken the lead on dealing with the ongoing humanitarian crises in Sudan, and that would include both the long war in the south and the situation in Darfur. And what we face now is that the international community doesn't have the institutional capacity or the political will to act decisively about these things. So what do we do? What we end up doing is, I think, when it's a purely humanitarian interest, our own inertia sides with, you know, tips us toward not dealing aggressively, and so we end up allowing things to go on. If it's a security issue, sometimes we'll act unilaterally. But it's a real problem, and I'm not sure what to suggest. I hope that after I come back from the Sudan, I'll have some clearer idea of what's possible and what should be done.
Walter Russell Mead is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's the author of Power, Terror, Peace, and War, America's Grand Strategy in a World at Risk. Robert Gallucci is dean of the Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service in Georgetown University. He's also the co-author of Going Critical, The First North Korean Nuclear Crisis. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.